In my career here, one of the most exciting stories has been the story of Edgar Cayce, the American prophet. I remember years ago interviewing Sidney Kirkpatrick about his book, Edgar Cayce, An American Prophet. It was riveting. Well, Sidney is back with us with True Tales from the Cayce Vault. And later on tonight, you are going to hear for a moment the actual voice of Edgar Cayce. No, I'm not going to channel him or do anything like that. You're going to hear an old recording that we got from the Association for Research and Enlightenment. In a moment, Sidney Kirkpatrick joins us. True Tales from the Cayce Vault. We are back with Sidney Kirkpatrick, a Pulitzer Prize nominee for a biography and award-winning documentary film director. For the past couple decades, he and his wife Nancy have devoted their futures and lives to studying the life and work of the psychic Edgar Cayce, known as the Sleeping Prophet. Sid and Nancy are the only biographers to have been granted unrestricted access to the Cayce Vault in Virginia Beach, hence the book True Tales from the Cayce Vault. They are co-editors of Venture Inward, the magazine of Edgar Cayce's Association for Research and Enlightenment. We have on our website, by the way, a little offer for you I just want you to know about. It's a great organization, and if you decide you want to be a member of the organization, you get a 25% member discount because you're a Coast to Coast listener, but there's full details at coasttocoastam.com. We also tweeted some information. But Sidney, welcome back to the program. I always enjoy it when you're on.
Thank you, George. It really is delightful. And you know, I just want to say right off the top, it's wonderful how knowledgeable about Cayce you've become. I mean, over the years, you've interviewed everybody who's anybody in the, you know, of Cayce scholars. And
he was an amazing person. I mean, truly an amazing person. And the things that he has done in his life before he passed on several years ago. I guess he passed away in 45, was it?
Yeah, January 45, sort of born in the decade after the Civil War, and gave these trance readings right up until his death in January 1945.
Did he die because of the readings? Did they beat him down, basically?
Well, especially during the war, when there were so many requests for these trance readings. I mean, the mail was coming, it was being delivered in literally sacks of mail because everyone, you know, had loved ones who were fighting in the war. And he'd been told in these trance readings themselves, you know, not to give more than two or three a day. And, you know, right towards the end, he was giving one day, it almost gave 25 of these readings. And so it's like a drain, I think, and that had a great deal to do with it, yes.
I want everybody to have an opportunity just to hear the voice of Edgar Cayce. It is very, very old, and it's difficult to hear, but you're going to hear his voice. And this was, he was giving one of his health readings, and I want you to listen.
Two services of Russian white horn. One hand of ancient of Ben Zoran.
So that was him giving one of his readings in his trance state, a very old recording. I wish they kind of had the technology we have today, Sidney.
Oh, absolutely. But it's the technology of today that really makes this work so exciting, because you can study it in ways that you couldn't do it in his time. And that's really what one of the things that keeps my wife and I going on this so much is all of these new revelations.
In Cayce's time, what was he looked at as? Was he revered as a prophet? Did they really get him in those days?
No, but you know, his reputation evolved over the decades. Certainly, what he is most known for today, as well as when he started, were these trance readings. And so, here you have someone who could put himself into a deep hypnotic trance. I mean, this was so deep that it was almost like he was in a coma. So he could lay down on a bed, a sofa. One or two times he did these readings laying on the floor. And once he put himself into trance, you could put any question you wanted to him, just anything, and you would get a response. I know for me personally, what was so very special here, you know, was the specificity of these answers: names, dates, blood type, blood temperature, body temperature. Just incredible specificity. You know, so many psychics we know speak in these vague, ambiguous terms that can be interpreted many ways. But Casey, it was his names, dates, you know, absolute specifics. You know, the volume of the readings. You know, Casey didn't give 200, 500 of these readings in the course of his life. He probably gave upwards of 25,000 readings in his career, of which today we have about 14,000 to study. But, you know, that's like two a day every day for 45
years. That's huge. In his trance state, Sydney, was he getting the information from some entity on the other side? I mean, how was he tapping into this?
Well, that's an eternal debate, and actually we have greater insights into it today than I think we did when he was giving these readings. In his day, it was generally believed, you know, that he was channeling a sort of Christ consciousness, God, you might say. I think as we study the readings today and can divide them, you know, you can study them on computer databases, you can study the language in each readings and look for consistencies. I think we've discovered that there's at least five or six, maybe even more, voices, you know, who or what's coming through. In some cases, there's a physician, clearly someone who's, you know, someone something, who is just an expert in the human body. But there are also times when there are engineers. Every once in a while, and this is what's fun and exciting sometimes when you're studying these readings, who or what comes through actually stops and identifies themselves. In one case, an actual angel, an angelic being came through, and, you know, Archangel Michael. So there are different sources for this information, but of course, one would argue that, you know, the highest source, if you want to call it that, would be a Christ consciousness, because there's just incredible spiritual insights into some of these readings.
Did Casey recollect these trance state readings that he did, or did he have no memory of it at all?
No memory of it at all.
Wow.
Occasionally, he would wake up and he will have had a dream during one of these sessions, but when he was out, he truly was out, and this is no exaggeration, no embroidery over the years of these stories. At one point, the skeptical physicians actually pulled one of his nails off his fingers out while he was in a trance. Another stuck a needle right through his hand.
Ouch!
He didn't even flinch.
He didn't flinch. They were trying to see if he would. Were they checking for trickery and stuff like that?
They didn't believe it. And of course, you can understand their skepticism because it was also very, very remarkable.
What did he do to the guy who pulled his fingernail off?
Well, this was actually a public demonstration, and he never gave that group another reason, obviously. But when he came out of trance, boy, he was just in agony.
Oh my gosh, right? That hurts. Yeah. He seemed to be more accurate, Sydney, in his health readings than earth changes and things like that. Am I right?
You know, I would say you are right, but it's not as black and white as that. Certainly the health readings are so compelling for the most part because they can be proven out. You know, Casey didn't have to be in the same building, in the same room, the same state as the patient, and he really accurately, you know, called, described their condition. In some of those cases, it wasn't proven out until there were autopsies, or at least in one case, an autopsy at the end. Predictions, if you want to describe it as that.
He's probably ahead of his time, because I was just talking to a guest about the rising sea levels. If Casey's correct, the United States is going to be underwater in many areas.
Yes, in deep trouble. Absolutely. And you combine that with like a polar shift and, we could be in deep trouble. But, I really want to just step out and really talk about these predictions just for a moment, because it's not a fixed thing. And the tabloid Casey, which is, what you see in the tabloids in
right.
The supermarket shelves, always, push these great predictions. Edgar Casey predicts, California is going to drop off into the ocean. In reality, almost all of these predictions are prefaced with a comment, given the current situation. And, one of the deepest essential things to these Casey readings is that you make your own future by what you hold in your head and in your heart. And you do this as an individual, George Norrie, a talk show host, or you do it, in a larger community, or you do it as a nation. And so I think it is possible for the future to change. And I think Casey recognized that. And yes, you're headed in a certain direction. Edgar Casey's youngest son, Edgar Evans, and you actually might have had
him. I had him on.
Yeah.
Now, he's
yeah.
since passed away.
Right.
But, I had him on a couple years before he died.
Yeah, exactly. The way he looked at that, and I find that really interesting. He looked at it as you put a beetle on a table, and you're watching from a distance the direction it's going, but you can't say for absolute certain that beetle is going to be at the other end of the table, So I really think it's you can make your own future, and I think that's essential to the Casey readings. But that said, he also describes, these great polar shifts. He describes China, that if America doesn't live up to, what's written on a dollar bill, in God we trust, if we don't live up to that, the power shift, the control, China will eventually dominate.
And he said this way before China had any power at all.
Exactly, when it was devastated during during World War II.
That's dramatic all by itself. I like to use a phrase from the Christmas Carol movie, when Scrooge was looking in the window of the future, and he was looking at little tiny Tim, and maybe he had died, maybe he didn't at the time in the future, and he said, "Are these things that will be?" Or could be. Could we say that about Edgar Casey's predictions too? That are they things that will be or could be? And could be being things we could alter or change so we don't have to go through that?
George, you are right on the money. This is why I enjoy so much speaking to you. You really get this. You really understand it. I love it.
That's fun. I like it too. Because I think we have the ability to change the outcome of the future. So experts and prophets like Casey are warning us of what will happen unless we change. And if we do, then what happens? Sydney, are we with you?
Those are great questions. You make your own future in this. It's interesting. I don't know if you've had social scientist Lynn McTaggart on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, so
great
there's
She's a great
classic example, groups of eight. This is how individuals, small groups can go on to make it, to truly change the future. Casey was doing very similar things to what Lynn McTaggart's talking about. Towards the end of his life, I think he viewed aspects of what had happened to him and what had happened around him as total failure. You know, he had gone to Virginia Beach to open this hospital, and it had operated, but it eventually went into bankruptcy, melted down. Friends who were very tight early in his life just became great antagonists. And what came out of that sort of turmoil were these series of readings called Search for God readings. And the idea was that it was sort of like a template. It was like a manual on how to get along, how two people, five people, eight people can, I guess you'd call it, get on the same page and work together on something. And so these Search for God groups, and it's interesting why they call them Search for God, because I know it sounds like a religious thing, but what Casey said was raising your psychic vibrations brings you closer to God. And so what these groups would do and what they do today, I mean, there's Search for God groups all over the United States, almost in every big city. But they meet once a month, and they pray together, among other things, and they, you know, talk about Casey, of course, and study these readings. But, you know, in a nucleus, that's very much like what Lynn McTaggart's talking about.
Yeah. How did you become interested in Edgar Casey in the first place?
Well, I think it's also my strength, and I think it's the team. It's Nancy.
Yeah.
You know, who's now my wife, but when we started, wasn't my wife. And in fact, we used to have these terrible tug of wars over this subject because, you know, I was actually a diehard skeptic. I think if you had asked me then, I would have said anybody who put their faith in a psychic ought to visit a psychiatrist. And I think today I would say every psychiatrist ought to consult a psychic before they treat anybody.
Yeah.
But I had a great reputation, and mainstream publishers and mainstream thought, and then I met Nancy, whom I eventually, you know, came to love and deeply in love, and it was just this Casey business came between us because she'd been a diehard fan of Edgar Casey since she was in high school. Goes way back. And so we had this tug of war because I just didn't buy into it. And eventually it took us to Virginia Beach. And George, I hope you get to Virginia Beach and see our campus someday.
I'd love to do that.
Because you would love it. And you know a whole lot of people there already.
I do. And you know what? And I've been using a lot of the Edgar Casey recommendations for health purposes, and you know, I've been eating my three almonds a day and everything else. I think he was spot on when it came to stuff like that, Sydney.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, one of the things I started was Casey hair loss treatment, and
that's you put the oil on your head and stuff.
Exactly.
Does it work?
Yeah. Well, if you look at pictures on my dust jackets and my, you know, before Casey and after Casey, and my hair's gone back and back and back, and then I discovered Casey, and I, you know, one of these, you know, we just, like yourself, you start using these treatments, and it's not like it's an expensive thing. It's just actually what it is Pennsylvania crude oil.
That's right. That's exactly right. Sydney, stay with us. We're going to come back and go inside the Casey vault next. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Sydney Kirkpatrick with us, True Tales from the Casey Vault. What is the vault, Sydney?
The vault. The vault is sort of is the repository where all of the Casey readings are kept. But it's not just the Casey readings. It's background on the readings. It's memorabilia associated with the readings. And it's always been in Virginia Beach. When Casey was alive, it was in his own house. And then eventually this association formed up around it. And now thanks to, I think, Kevin Dadeshi, whom you've also had on the show, built this wonderful new vault for us. It's delighted me, actually. There's a lot of great new things in on the ARE campus there, but the vault is by far my favorite, and because it's where all the paper is, and I'm a, you know, archivist at heart, and I just love it.
We're not going to have Geraldo Rivera pop in there and find an empty bottle of champagne or anything like that, huh?
No, but there's, you know, just constant discoveries. Even when we were, just a couple years ago, when we were moving to the new vault, we found a whole bunch of stuff when we pulled out the file cabinets and things. And so, you know, things that had dropped away over the years, or as, you know, so much, so often, things that seemed rather insignificant, say, back in the 30s and 40s, today take on a great new significance. Burton Wheeler, for instance, you know, it's a name that's sort of dropped out of the public eye, but at one time he was, you know, a presidential contender for FDR's, you know, seat. And so there are these readings that were given for Burton Wheeler. I mean, somebody running for president of the United States. People who go back a ways, such as myself here, will remember Jimmy Stewart. You remember that Jimmy Stewart movie?
It's a Wonderful Life?
No, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that was based on the life of Burton Wheeler.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And now we discover, you know, Burton Wheeler was getting readings. And it says right in the reading that he will be president if he wants it. And so everybody just dismissed that out of hand because he wasn't president. FDR was president. Now, because the Burton Wheeler papers have been open now at the universities, and you can go in and see what was really going on behind the scenes, we discover that FDR actually offered Burton Wheeler a slot for the vice presidency. And, of course, FDR died in office, and he would have been, just like the reading said, he would have been president if he had said yes. But anyway, there's all kinds of wonderful new revelations, and I'm just very excited these days about the Casey work.
How extensive is the vault and the information in the vault? I mean, they have the readings are in there and things like
that.
It's
growing and growing. Every year it grows more. For example, One of my hobbies, I just love it, is treasure hunting. And there are lots of treasure readings in the Edgar Casey readings. A lot of people just think it's just the medical or the predictions, but there are a whole bunch of treasure readings in there. So last winter, you know, my wife and I always come to Florida to get away from the snow, and so we went treasure hunting. Almost every year we go treasure hunting one way or another, one place or another, and we went in the Everglades. And Casey gave these readings on buried pirate treasure in the Everglades, and a specific spot in the Everglades called Lost Man's River, and it which has got a really fascinating, wonderful history. And, you know, so we chartered a boat, and we got all the equipment and went out there. And what we learned, I mean, we didn't recover any treasure, mostly, I think, because the mangroves changed and thick. I don't know if you've been in the Everglades, but, you know, the topography just changes year to year. But the most interesting observation that came out of that was that it was actually Calico Jack the pirate. I don't know if you, Calico Jack, if you've seen that TV series Black Sails?
No, I have not, no.
Okay, yeah, well, Calico Jack is a character in that, but he was a real pirate. And so you'd asked before about, you know, who or what's coming through Casey. Is it one person? Is it one entity? This is a classic example that it's not. Is Calico Jack, or who's ever burying that treasure, is seeing the Everglades coming through Casey as he's giving his reading, describing the terrain, but it's the terrain when the treasure was buried. The same with, there's another great set of treasure readings on Kelly's Ford, which is in Virginia, and it's Confederate gold, or it's Civil War gold, has been buried there by retreating soldiers. and the description is exactly the way it was when that battle was being fought. And so, but today there's a freeway right through that. And so you follow this, you know, follow the contours of the earth as Casey is describing in the reading, and all of a sudden you hit a freeway, but or, you know, roads in a way that wasn't there during the Civil War. But where I'm going in all of this is, as we learn more, there's more and more interesting things coming into the vault, tools, you know, scientific tools to study these readings in ways that just weren't there before. And with each new discovery, you know, you just get these great revelations.
What would you say, Sydney, might be some of the most important readings that Casey did?
Well, certainly, you know, on a sort of your baseline, the medical readings. I mean, you just cannot argue, because in so many ways he was so far ahead of his time, and things that were sort of intractable diseases back then, or, you know, they just didn't know how to deal with, Casey provides insights. And just, I won't go too much into this, but something like psoriasis. You know, we know, you know, psoriasis is very common, and it's considered a skin condition. You know, it's a discoloration on the skin. Mm-hmm. And what Casey said is that that's just a symptom of the deeper condition, and that what psoriasis actually is a thinning of the walls of the colon, so that toxins are leaching out and coming out through the system, so that in order to, you know, in order to treat psoriasis, you have to treat diet. But that's just, you know, one of many different things. The readings that fascinate me the most are the ancient mysteries. Atlantis, for example. Now
those were great. Or the Hall of Records, where the base of the Sphinx.
Right, and you can't prove them out in quite as easy a way as you do the medical readings. But if you hadn't got credibility with those medical readings, you might have dismissed the Atlantis. But because they're so credible, Jesus, you just can't dismiss it. Another one of these treasure hunts we're on is an Atlantean-related treasure hunt. And Casey identifies this spot on an island in the Caribbean where Columbus landed, or nearby where Columbus landed. And Casey describes a freshwater well. And on this part of the island, there's only no one knew when we went looking for it that there was a freshwater well. But back in Casey's day, there was. And in this reading, it describes this freshwater well, and that the native Carib Indians had dug this well and lined it with stone blocks that they had cannibalized from a nearby temple. Now, you know, we're talking Columbus's time when
right.
it was done, or earlier. And here was this ruins of a temple that these Indians had found. And so they naturally just used what building materials they had at hand, and they wanted to keep the sand from filling in their well. And what Casey says is that there were inscriptions on these stone blocks, and that if you dig down and, you know, you will find Atlantean writing. Now, I know that's not proof of Atlantis the way a skeptic would demand.
But they were there, right?
Yeah, and so it's just fun. It's mind-boggling.
What would you say were some of his strangest readings?
Well, what started me on that path, which is one funny reading, in a place called Bokoma, Oklahoma. It's a real, real place. And Casey says, "Oh, so few people will ever commit suicide in Bokoma, Oklahoma." And that's a strange reading. And so Nancy and I drove to Bokoma, Oklahoma on one of our cross-country trips, and it turns out that the soil in Bokoma, Oklahoma has highest consistency of lithium. So it's right in the soil. And you know, which works just like Prozac does.
Yeah, it's a mood alterer for you. Makes you happy,
so,
I guess.
Yeah, so what seemed like a strange reading actually, you know, turned out to have a scientific basis. But there are many, many other really strange readings. The strangest to my mind, and it's something I revisit all the time, as Casey says, there's a series of readings on aging. And Casey essentially says that you could live as long as you want. And so the person in the, you know, conducting the reading asks, well, how long can you live, you know, exactly? And Casey says, there are those among us who've never died.
Hmm.
So, you know, essentially saying that, you know, walking around among us, there are some people who have never died. At least that's the way I interpret it. So that's certainly...
When Casey was a little boy, Sydney, I mean, did he have these same abilities? Or did they develop later?
Well, they certainly developed later. They evolved. And I think that's one of the things a lot of people who first start studying Casey don't quite understand. You know, for Edgar as a little child, young kid at school, you know, he got hit in the back with a baseball. Hit it, knocked him over, knocked it down his spine. And that was one of the first discoveries, of course, that when he was unconscious, that someone or something was speaking through him. But there were many other interesting things as a child which sort of percolated up, which we now recognize. One was, which is rarely ever talked about, the death of his little brother when Casey was just a young child, and his mother and father had a serious difficulties together, and the father had bolted from the house right after this little young child had died, and Casey saw his mother crying for the first time, and it was just very, very moving moment, because, you know, postpartum depression, or I'm not sure what happened with the mother, but she was, you know, in just hysteric tears, curled up on the floor, and she grabbed her son Edgar and pulled him down to her on the dirt floor of this kitchen in this Kentucky cabin, and they prayed together. And it was, Casey later remarked on this, because it was the first time he'd ever prayed and didn't know what that was about. But
had no idea what prayer was.
Right, exactly. And he heard a musical note. Sounded like his uncle's violin, you know, a fiddle. He heard a musical note. When he and his mother were there praying together, her hands cupped in his, he heard what, you know, skeptic would call an audio hallucination, but what he was hearing was a certain vibration. So he was able to put it came across to him as music, and he would later describe prayer, two people praying together, as like a musical note rising to the heavens, and that the more people praying together, the more that created. Anyways, they're so. So he had these abilities. He could find lost pocket watches, wedding rings, and there was experimentation over the years, and he tried to push it out of his life when he met Gertrude, the woman he eventually married, because she didn't want any part of this. Didn't, you know, pushed it out. He promised he wouldn't do any more of this stuff. She was sure he'd end up in a mental institution if he did. But he really pushed it out, and it came back to bite him. He lost his voice.
Did he like doing it?
I think I don't think like is the right word. I think he felt a calling from God, and I think he felt
his duty.
Like he had to do this.
Yeah, a mission.
And, at various points in his life, I'm sure he would have walked away from it, and at two points he actually did. But he viewed this as a gift from God, and that it ought to be, that he had to use it. He had to use it to, you know, help people, help children in particular.
And
that's why he didn't do it. It wasn't a commercial transaction. I mean,
He got paid something for this, didn't he?
Yeah, you know, later on, I mean, for most of his life, you know, he earned a living as a photographer. He was a pretty good photographer. He actually won a Kodak Award for Best Photo of the Year one year.
How old was he when he started the trance readings and things like that?
Well, it was in his late 20s, early 30s, but it evolved. I mean, for a long time, it was a sort of trial and error proposition because you didn't know how to ask the right questions. First, you didn't realize that you were like it was a real communication, like you could ask questions and get answers. And it slowly evolved where you learned how to ask the questions. Like you couldn't say, what are all the things wrong with me? Because it would just go on and on and on and on and on. Yeah, and you had to be very specific. And then eventually, you know, the medical readings took up the lion's share of his early life, and then someone had the bright idea to ask a non-medical related question, and with the same speed and seeming accuracy he had answered the medical readings, you know, I think that one of the earlier questions was about a passage in the Bible.
That's right. We're going to come back, Sydney, and talk more and take some calls as well.